Rock 107, WIRX. Good evening, I'm Ray Gustafson from WSJM News. The purpose of our town hall meeting tonight is aimed at bringing awareness to the staggering statistics and effects of suicide in and around Berrien County and in Michigan and across our country in general. What we'll be doing now for the next hour tonight, commercial free, is we'll be breaking down barriers and stigma surrounding suicide. We'll talk about depression, talk about other factors that affect behavioral well-being. Tonight's town hall meeting is being brought to you, like I said, commercial free by Walsh Body Shop, the shop with the car on top, proud to help support suicide prevention and education in our community. Now tonight, it's really been created to provide you with an inspirational and educational presentation about topics, as well as we're also going to provide valuable information about some of the local resources that we have available to help those dealing with mental health issues. We have a panel tonight during our town hall that I'll be introducing in just a moment, as well as some people from the radio station to help us out. And we also have some guests in the audience tonight. We are broadcasting live tonight from My Journey on M139, kind of right behind the bus station. If you'd like to come over and follow us tonight, you can come in and sit in the audience if you have some questions. One of the first people I want to introduce, though, is Zach East from WIRX 98.3 The Coast. Zach, what inspired us to want to put this together really to do the Suicide Town Hall tonight?
Well, from WIRX's standpoint, anybody that listens to the station knows that we've lost a lot of rock stars this year. We've lost Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington, and both of them were to suicide, one after the other, and one connected to the other. And a lot of conversations that started being had in the rock community about suicide and awareness and things that people needed to get out and discuss. And so a lot of things have been happening in the rock community, and we're doing that along with our partner My Journey here, who happens to be our Rock Alliance benefactor for 2017. So because as you'll find out, My Journey works so closely with those who have serious mental health issues in our community, that this is one of the best possible things we could do to help our community be educated and heal and move forward and find ways to hopefully take these statistics and change them for the better within our area. So we do want your questions. We want what it is that you might have as a potential question, and you can ask those on our Facebook Live. Just go to WIRX's Facebook page. You can also go to News Talk 94.9 WSJM's Facebook page and ask those questions there, and then when we have time towards the end of today, we'll be getting those questions on the air.
Yeah, so like Zach said, in addition to being live on Rock 107 WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM tonight, we're also on Facebook Live, as Zach said, through Rock 107 WIRX on their Facebook page and News Talk 94.9 WSJM on the Facebook page. I want to get to introductions here to our panel. I'll start to what would be my left, Anna Magdalena Christensen. Did I say it right, Anna? Pretty close. Okay. And you're with MI Journey. So tell me real quick, do a little introduction about your involvement and why we're doing this tonight.
Okay. I'm the executive director of My Journey. My Journey is a mental health recovery center in Berrien County, and we serve the whole county. I'm not sure exactly what to say.
Well, that's good. That's a good introduction. Have you, and I will ask this of each of our panel members tonight, and as I come across, I will ask you, have you been touched by a suicide, either someone in your family or a friend in your lifetime? So, Anna, have you had to experience a suicide in your friends or family in your life?
Not a suicide, but as the executive director of My Journey is a peer-run organization, which means everybody connected with My Journey has a serious mental illness. I have been suicidal. I have made attempts. Obviously, I'm here.
So you yourself have attempted.
Yes.
That's very nice of you to admit that. That's brave to admit that to the audience. So thank you for sharing that with us tonight. Good. Next up from Riverwood, we have Michelle Olson. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm good. How are you?
Tell me a little bit about you and your involvement tonight.
Absolutely. So I work at Riverwood, which is a community mental health facility in Berrien County. I'm a clinical therapist. My position at Riverwood is the SMI supervisor, which is those with severely mentally ill. obviously that's a pretty heavy diagnosis with the clients that we oversee to ensure that they remain safe and get the help that they need.
Okay, great. Anybody in your immediate friends or family that you've been touched by a suicide?
Absolutely. I have a friend and a family member.
Okay. Recently or years past?
One 5 years ago, 1 6 years ago.
Okay. Well, sorry to hear that. So next up is Denise Haskin. Denise is, I'll let you introduce yourself and share your story a little bit.
Sure. My name is Denise Haskin, and I'm here as a concerned community member and a mother who lost her child to suicide. I also help with the Berrien County Suicide Prevention Coalition. I help to organize their last two candlelight vigils in honor of the memory of people who've lost their lives to suicide. I lost my son Brandon in 2014 at the age of 16. He committed suicide, and I also lost my father in 1999 to suicide. So the effect that it's had on me is huge, and I'm here to try to help other people
right.
who may be going through this and to help parents understand maybe ways that they can help their children.
Yeah. How long, and I want to get to you next, but real quick, Denise, how long did it take you, 3 years ago you lost
yes,
your son?
Right.
How long
yeah.
did it take you before you could openly start talking about this and start doing some of the work that you're doing? Did it take a while for you, and did you have to go through some sort of therapy yourself, if I can ask?
Sure. I was very fortunate and blessed to have some amazing support with family and friends who really embraced me during that time in my life to help me understand, you know, how to help myself. That support was invaluable in me determining this course of action that I wanted to take to really help other people.
Right.
This is a mission about, now that Brandon's not here anymore, what can I do to ensure that that never happens to another parent? What can I do to ensure that our community is made aware of the need, the desperate need for suicide prevention,
right.
and the fact that this is happening to younger and younger kids? And at 16 years old, you know, the cognitive thinking ability just isn't there. So how do we help those kids understand that what they're going through is a very temporary thing? And hopefully if we can help them understand that, they won't take a permanent action like suicide.
And that'll be some of the things we'll be talking about tonight. Thank you for sharing. So,
yes.
And Trent Watford from the Suicide Prevention Coalition. Did I say your last name correctly, Trent?
Yes.
I did. Okay. Tell me your involvement and what you bring to the table tonight.
Okay. Well, excuse me. In 2010, our 20-year-old son, Nathan, who was serving in the Navy in the nuclear program, took his own life while he was in Guam. We had no previous thought or anything that he said about
right.
being depressed or suicidal at all. So it was a total shock. After his death, I'd say within the year or so, I was concerned that anything was being done in our community. I tried to research and see what organizations there were, if there was a coalition, and I found that there was not. There was in other counties in Michigan, but not in ours. The following year, there was another young man in Berrien Springs that died by suicide. I met with some of those people, and we kind of got together and invited others to join us and see if we could do something about that. Riverwood sort of took our group under their wings a little bit, and so working with that, we now have a coalition that includes Lakeland, Riverwood, the Department of Health, RESA, and other community members. So I felt like, as a parent, I just don't remember ever hearing anybody in any training, in any school event, any church event, ever talk about mental health,
right.
much less the symptoms of depression. And after I learned the symptoms, I realized that even though they were subtle, my son was showing symptoms of depression
mm-hmm.
if I had just been better aware. And so we want to try to make other families aware of those symptoms and try to get help before it's too late.
Right. And I will, I'm Ray Gustafson. This is Rock 107 and WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM. We've kind of blown up our formats tonight on both of our radio stations because this is such an important issue to be talking about, suicide. And so that's why we're doing this town hall tonight. I'll take a moment and kind of share a story. I had an older brother, 2.5 years older than me, and 25 years ago. decided that he would take his own life as well. And so throughout the evening, I can share some of my experiences as well. So we've all been touched by, you know, somebody in our life, either friends or family or ourselves, with a suicide. And I know we, on Facebook Live, we can't necessarily see everybody in the audience. Just a show of hands in the audience tonight, who's been touched or affected by a suicide, either a friend or a family? Wow, look at that. Everybody in the room pretty much has got their hand up. So, it affects people in so many different ways. I want to get into some of the statistics as we opened up our conversation tonight. Some of the statistics of locally and maybe on a state level and maybe on a national level, and I think we all have some of that information in front of us. Trent, I'll start with you and kind of move down the line, and feel free, Anna, Michelle, and Denise, to kind of speak up to some of the information I'll have Trent give if you have some comments that you'd like to share on it. What would be some statistics, Trent, that you can share on suicide just in Berrien County alone over the past, say, what do we have, back to 1999? Is that as far back as we go, or do you go back farther than the information, or maybe you don't go back quite that far?
No.
How far back do you go with statistics, Trent?
Well, I have a presentation from the medical examiner, Dr. Johansson. He goes back to 2014.
Okay.
So it was 26 suicides in 2014, 31 in 2015, and 21 in 2016.
And this is just Berrien County you're talking
about,
right?
This is only Berrien County.
Say those numbers again, because are you, does that, I saw eyebrows raise in the room. Say those numbers again.
And actually, going back from what we've studied, the average has been
25
for quite a few years. So 2014 is 26, 2015 is 31, and 2016 is 21. And some other breakdowns of that, it's predominantly male. For example, in 2016, it was 17 versus 4 female. It's predominantly white. So again, in 2016, 18 white, 3 African-American, and age-wise, it's pretty much clustered between the ages of 20 and 64, with 9 between 20 and 44, and 7 between 45 and 64.
Between 20 and 64, that's a really broad range. Michelle, what, do you have any idea why? Do they narrow it down a little bit? I know you don't maybe have the statistics in front of you, but based on your experience, why would that be such a broad range? I mean, that's, you're talking a 40-year span here. Wouldn't you think they would narrow it down a little bit more?
I think there's multiple answers to that, and some of I don't know. One of the things from the mental health aspect that we know is a lot of times mental health, the illness doesn't kick in until later. For example, schizophrenia doesn't kick in usually, typically, in mid-20s, late-20s. Sometimes that goes undiagnosed for many, many years. Substance abuse, someone who's addicted, it can take years to build up to that point, depending on what the drug is. So there's lots of factors that could play into that one.
Okay. Trent, any others? And then I've got a couple other questions here.
Well, another statistic that I think is impactful is not just the completed suicides, but the number of attempted suicides or people in crisis. So there is a national 800 crisis line that we advertise for people to call. And the statistics from them, this was 2015, I believe, but there was 456 calls to the crisis line from Berrien County.
456?
Right.
Wow.
In that year. I've also talked to the 911 call center, and they tell me that they figure they average one call per shift on average.
Those numbers are staggering. Denise, now you've got some statistics as well. Do yours line up pretty much with what Trent is saying, or do you go back a little bit farther than 2014, I think was his?
I do go back further than that, but year over year we've seen an increase in the amount of suicides. And right now, nationally, suicide is the number two leading cause of death for age groups 15 to 24. When you think about that age group, that's very difficult to say. The number two leading cause of death for that 15 to 24-year-old is suicide. That's so hard. It's higher than homicide. So, yes.
Right.
So to me, that's a staggering statistic, and that's what I'd like to see changing. I believe in the state of Michigan, some of the statistics that I found are if you reduce that age group from 15 to 24 and shorten it to 15 to 18, it's the number one leading cause of death. Number one. So to me, that speaks volumes about what we need to do as a community to try to pull efforts together
right.
to not only raise awareness for suicide prevention, but to do something that helps these individuals who are going through these problems that are causing them to take their own lives or even thinking about wanting to take their lives.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of the yep. things that we need a little bit later on throughout the evening. But thank you for sharing. Michelle, you were nodding your head a little bit in agreement or disagreement with what Denise had said. Putting
well,
you on the spot here.
Yeah. So we know that that's a risky teenage age. Multiple reasons. Part of it is brain development. If we talk from the clinical aspect, you know, the brain develops from back forward. The frontal is our reasoning. So our brain doesn't form fully until we're about 25. So you're looking at these young adolescents who brain is not fully formed, can't make rational decisions most of the time, good decisions most of the time, very impulsive. All those are very indicative, you know, toward what suicide. You know, one thing I did want to point out about these numbers, because as staggering as they are, and I always think about this when I hear numbers, is that's what was reported. So when we think about that, that number is actually higher. That's and for some reason that always sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
That it's higher than that. Those are just the ones we know of.
Right, right. Anna, you were nodding there too. You agree that those numbers are
are
higher. Now, how so? Can you give me some examples of some of the ones that go unreported that we don't know about? Possibly?
I was 9.
You were 9?
Nobody knew.
Get nice and close to that microphone.
Okay, I was 9. Nobody knew.
Nobody knew anything?
Nobody knew, and I never told anybody until I was well into my adult age.
And you didn't call anybody or anything, you just...
No.
Okay. So that was...
And there were times later, no, you don't tell people.
It's embarrassing. You're embarrassed about it, right?
Well, you just don't.
Yeah.
You just don't. You don't talk about it.
Well, and there's this history of a stigma, and I think part of having these open conversations is to break down that barrier of a stigma of mental health addiction and suicide. That's what we're here for. So well,
some people
not
even some people even get shamed for having a mental illness or
absolutely.
You know, I mean, you know, Trent, you were.
I was just going to say, as far as the underreporting, if you consider the number of overdose deaths. And in talking to people at the health department that work more in that area, there was, in 2015, there was a total between suicide and overdoses, 55 deaths in Berrien County. 35 of those were by overdose. And of course, you never know if that overdose was an intentional overdose or an accidental overdose. And anecdotally, I've heard from a parent of someone who did die eventually from overdosing that one of his attempts... he said, I was trying to kill myself. Later, of course, they don't know. But there's a overlap there.
Yeah, so as we were talking, there are some unreported, like you said, was it an accidental overdose or was it an intentional overdose? Somebody who was in an automobile accident, possibly? Mm-hmm. What are some others that you are aware of that besides overdoses?
Well, I mean, I have a friend, a very good friend, whose son died. He drove his car into the bridge abutment on 31 going to South Bend. I mean, it was presented and portrayed as an accident. But when I visited the scene, you could see the tracks of the car,
mm-hmm.
You know, straight in, person behind said there was no attempt to stop. So, yeah, you don't catch those either.
And a lot of times, you know, having covered news for so many years, a lot of times those will be just, they fell asleep at the wheel or something like that. And they got drowsy because drowsy can be as dangerous as driving intoxicated. And so they just chalk it up to, they probably just fell asleep at the wheel. Denise?
One of the meetings that the Suicide Prevention Coalition held at Lakeland, they actually invited the medical examiner, Dr. Johansson. Dr. Johansson came and presented findings for statistics. And one of the things he said was there's certain criteria a death has to meet in order to be determined that it's going to be investigated as a suicide. So if it doesn't meet those criteria, then it won't be investigated as a suicide death, even if it might be a suicide death.
Do we know what that criteria is offhand? Anybody in the panel? Not right offhand?
I don't have that firsthand knowledge, but I know he did say that it was specific requirements and that during the investigative process, either the police help determine that or his office determines, hey, we think we need to rule this out as a suicide, so let's investigate it further, or rule it as a suicide. So you don't know for certain if that criteria is not being met, whether or not they're going to rule it that way.
Right. Now, later on, coming up in our broadcast tonight, again, this is Rock 107 WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM. We are adapting our format tonight because of we wanted to do this town hall and talk about suicide and suicide prevention for the next hour here till 7 o'clock tonight. Again, the purpose of our town hall is aimed at bringing awareness to what I would consider staggering statistics and effects of suicide just in and around Berrien County and in Michigan in general. Trent, I'm going to come back to you. You gave us some numbers for Berrien County. How do those numbers, if you have them, or if the rest of the panel could chime in, how do those numbers compare to Berrien County to the rest of the state of Michigan? Are we about average for on a state level, or are we higher or lower? Does anybody have that information?
Well, I do have a graph, so there's been times when we've been lower and times we've been higher. So 2010 to 2014, we've been tracking a little bit under the national average, but at the very end, it came up and met it.
At the end of 2015?
2014.
Or 2014. So we were a little higher, but...
I was also going to mention, if I could, statistically, there's 25 attempted suicides per completed suicide. So if you think about that in Berrien County, if there's an average of 25 suicides per year, multiply that by 25 attempts, you get per completed suicide, you get just
625.
I got into radio, so I didn't have to do math, but that's a lot. Yeah, exactly. So, Michelle, Anna, what do you think about those numbers? For every one, there's 25 attempts. What's that? How does that make you feel?
Well, I put this on our Facebook page, My Journey's Facebook page,
right.
And I got a response from a mother who has a 13-year-old daughter, and the 13-year-old daughter recently has attempted twice.
Wow.
I don't know. Sometimes you wonder, what can we do?
Right.
You know, what can we do that will make a difference? Because, like you were saying earlier, your son went to the school counselor, and the school counselor is bound to call the police.
Right.
And that scares the kid off.
Yeah.
There needs to be some safe place, safe venue that they can talk about it. A lot of times it's not that they want to die so much as they want to cease hurting so badly.
Right. And we'll get to, I want to talk about some of the resources that are available in a little bit, because that's important. But I want to transition over here to, we've had a couple of meetings prior to doing this town hall tonight, and I want to talk about some ways to identify someone who has a mental illness. And I know, Denise, you've got some statistics, and Trent, you shared some with me. Michelle, I think you've got some, actually, I think everybody has a little bit of information about this. So I want to kind of just run down the line. Denise, I'll start with you. What would be some signs that someone might have a mental illness to maybe help try to identify it before we get into the resources that we have available? So what would be some, I don't know, is there typical signs? Is that a fair question?
So I think my personal experience has been more with depression than it was with other mental illnesses. I believe my son Brandon suffered from depression and extreme anxiety. I think that there was a point in time in his life where things just changed, and we saw it immediately. He just was a different person than who he normally was. He lacked enjoyment in the same types of activities that he did before. He withdrew from friends and family. He, you know, started talking about not wanting to live. You know, he had all of these ideas, and I didn't know that he was suffering so badly with them. We did try to attempt to get him some help, but by the time we, you know, intervened as a family to put some resources in place for him, he had already made the choice.
Now, you brought up a point that it might just be something that a lot of people will say, well, if they're talking about it, they would never do it. Michelle or Anna, anybody, is that a true statement? Or Trent, is that a true statement?
No.
If they talk about it, they're not going to do it because they're talking about it.
No, that's not true.
That's
true
one
at
of
all.
The signs.
That is one of the signs that they are talking about it.
Yes.
Because I've heard stories that if they're quiet and don't say anything, like I can with my brother, never said a word to me. I spoke to him at 9:30 the evening that he did, and he was gone by 1 in the morning. I was the last person to talk to him. He was happy. He was getting ready. It was close to Christmas. He was getting ready to. He was all excited about coming home for Christmas. He was wrapping gifts, and he was gone 5 hours later. Nobody knew a thing. He'd never said a word about it. So tell me the breakdown.
That's the hard thing with depression is a lot of people want to keep it a secret. They don't want to let other people know, hey, I'm really struggling here to feel good about myself or to feel good about the situation I'm in. And there's no reason, because if you're suffering from depression, it's a mental illness. There's no reason for you to really feel like you can't be happy, but you do. You don't feel happy. And someone who doesn't suffer from depression or doesn't understand it, they'll say, well, wake up tomorrow and just think happy thoughts.
Yeah.
Wake up tomorrow and just choose to be happy. Happiness isn't a choice when you suffer from depression. People need to understand that people who are suffering from depression have a mental illness. You can't just tell them to be happy, blink your eyes, and hope that they're going to be happy. You have to help put some resources in place to get them help so that they understand what they can do for themselves to be happy, and they can maybe get prescribed medication that will help them overcome whatever issue they're having at the time. So I think that's the biggest, you know, takeaway I have, is if you're not happy, it's not always because you're just choosing not to be happy. You might be suffering from depression. You might need to go talk to a mental health professional. You might benefit from prescription medication. Whatever it is that you may feel at that time that you need to do to help yourself, I urge you to go do it if you feel like you might be suffering from depression.
Right. Trent, now depression's not the only sign, though, is it, from what your information
well,
you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to memorize all these, but 90% of suicides, they feel, are related to depression.
Right. I think that's the number one. I think we're in agreement there.
So you have persistently sad, anxious, irritable, loss of interest in previously enjoyed activities, withdrawal from friends and family, trouble sleeping oversleeping, feeling tired or run down, change in appetite and weight, anger, rage, overreaction to criticism, feeling unable to meet expectations, difficulty thinking and concentrating, feeling restless or agitated, feeling worthless or hopeless, persistent physical symptoms such as headaches, digestive problems, chronic pain that do not respond to treatment, substance abuse problems, reoccurrent thoughts of death or suicide, and these symptoms last for 2 or more weeks, could be a sign of depression.
Mm-hmm.
I have trouble memorizing that whole list.
That's a big list.
So my thought from my personal experience with my son, after I saw this list, though, I could identify, you know, multiple ones here that I observed, but we thought that he was a teenager that was just struggling with, teenage boys tend not to smile. They tend to like video games. They tend to like to stay in their room. They tend not to want to eat supper with you. It's just sort of typical things. But what I've sort of decided is if you see a person who's, you know, doesn't seem to be thriving, and it continues for a while, that you should, instead of thinking, they're probably okay, it's more like the iceberg type thing. You need to kind of imagine that this has been going on a while. There could be a whole lot more going on than what I'm thinking. So after the Navy investigated my son's death, they found 6 times over 4 years prior to his death, he had written down some notes. They were sort of like suicide notes. They weren't saying, I'm going to kill myself. They were saying, I'm miserable, I'm depressed, I'm thinking about suicide, I'm hopeless, and he just typed those on his computer. So
really,
when I was observing over those 4 years, what I thought was teenage angst, it was actually someone who was struggling with deep depression, and actually I didn't know he was treating it with alcohol, to try to work with it that way, which
right.
is not helping.
And I
right.
think that's why suicide and overdose overlap, because a lot of people who have mental health issues do self-medicate. You know, when they don't feel good about themselves, they may turn to drugs or alcohol to try to help them feel better about themselves. And that's why there's the overlap, as Trent mentioned earlier, with suicide and overdose.
Right. Michelle, have you seen, now we've been talking about some of the symptoms to look for. In your experience, have there been people that are just fine and nothing, and then all of a sudden they take their own life? That was kind of how it was with my brother. I think what happened with him, he had just recently had back surgery. He was on painkillers, and I think he started drinking that evening. There was alcohol in his system when we did the autopsy. So there were no signs. There were not a single one of these symptoms leading up to it, and he was gone 5 hours after I talked to him. So do you know of any circumstances or information about people that would, as Denise mentioned, with some substance abuse that put them over the edge?
Absolutely. So the CDC came out with some numbers in 2015 that 33% of those who completed suicide tested positive for alcohol, and 20% tested positive for opiates.
Really?
So 53% of the people who committed suicide in 2015 were under the influence, and we know by the nature of using, it impairs our judgment.
Right. Anna, did you have some other symptoms that Trent went through a pretty good list? Were there any other symptoms that you wanted to mention?
You can get these right back there.
Okay, so we have some flyers here.
Let me just read them real quick.
But run through some of the ones that maybe Trent didn't mention.
If you have a family member, these are the signs that mean someone is at risk for suicide. Risk is greater if a behavior is new or has increased, or if it seems related to a painful event, loss, or change. Here they are. Talking about wanting to die or kill oneself. Looking for a way to kill oneself, such as doing online searches. Or in my case, one time, I went to the doctor and told him, I can't sleep. Ah. My father was a pharmacist. So we had a big, it was this, no exaggeration, this thick, the physician's desk reference.
Like a couple inches
thick.
I read
through the whole thing and found the medication, because it would say how much from people's experience had been lethal. This was the one that it took the least. It was a sleeping pill. So I went and said, I just can't sleep. And this is what's worked for me in the past. But you know, I got some. But it was only half of what I needed, so I needed to go back. But I knew the girl. It was his daughter that went to my school, and so I didn't go back. But anyway,
right.
If you look for a way to kill yourself, or you buy a gun, or whatever, talk about feeling hopeless or maybe having no reason to live. I don't know why I'm here. Talk about being trapped or in unbearable pain. Sometimes it's that they're in physical pain and they can't handle it anymore. Talking about being a burden to others. Increasing the use of drugs or alcohol, like you mentioned. Acting reckless or agitated, behaving recklessly. That's like a lot of teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a new behavior, if they haven't been particularly reckless in the past, then you want to watch. Sleeping too little or too much, like the 5 years I spent in bed. Those were bad years. Withdrawing or feeling isolated. Maybe someone was real chipper before and now they're quiet. Maybe repair to their room more. Showing rage or talking about seeking revenge or mood swings.
Mm-hmm.
That's if you know someone. If you are someone, if you're having trouble coping, after a traumatic event, problems may come and go. It's important to know when to ask for help. If you or someone you know is experiencing any of the following problems, please ask for help.
Right.
My latest was not that long ago. There was a traumatic event. I'm married. I have 2 children. If my life circumstance had been different, if I didn't have children, and if I didn't have a husband, I would have gotten a gun, and that would have been the end.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, here's some. Eating or sleeping too much. If you're sleeping a lot, if you just have a hard time getting up, or you're not sleeping much, if you're pulling away from people and things, if you don't have any energy, if you feel numb, your emotions are numb or like nothing matters, if you have aches and pains that you can't explain, if you feel hopeless or helpless, if you're smoking or drinking or using drugs more than you should, if you feel unusually confused or forgetful, on edge, angry or upset, or if you're worried or scared, if you're yelling a lot, fighting with family and friends, if you're having thoughts or memories that you can't get out of your mind, especially bad ones,
right?
If you're thinking of hurting or killing yourself or someone else, if you're unable to perform daily tasks like taking care of your kids or getting to work or school, if these problems are making it hard to get things done, get through your day, or getting worse, ask for help.
Ask for help. Yeah, exactly.
Because we don't want you or anyone else to become another statistic.
Yeah, it's like the the State Patrol was doing their Operation Safe Driver. They want to go towards zero deaths. This would be the same thing. I mean, I would love to look at these numbers and say, hey, we didn't have any last year. Great, you know. And that's what we would like to drive for on that. We all have shared, some of the signs and symptoms and things. And we've got some people in the audience. Brock Havens from WIRX is here. Let me first go back. Rock 107 WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is called our Suicide Prevention Town Hall meeting tonight. We decided that we would take two of our radio stations tonight and talk about suicide. Zach East from WIRX and 98.3 The Coast, to all of our stations here at Midwest Family Broadcasting. Zach, we're broadcasting on not only on the two radio stations, but we're also on Facebook Live on both of our radio station Facebook pages. And how can people get involved if they've got some questions, Zach?
They can head to Facebook at any time on either News Talk 94.9 WSJM's Facebook page or WIRX's Facebook page. There's a Facebook Live going on both of those right now as we speak. And there are a few folks who are already up there and commenting. Would you like to take a question?
We'll
from
get
that?
To some of the comments okay. here in a minute. I want to get a couple of comments from the audience, and then because I had a question, and then I wanted to get into some of the resources, and we can get to some of those questions if that's what they have as well. So if you would like to comment or ask a question about something, you can go to Rock 107 WIRX or News Talk 94.9 WSJM Facebook page. We're streaming this live. You can watch along if you're not able to listen. Brock Havens from WIRX is going to help me. We've got quite a group of people in the audience here, and admittedly, I think just about everybody in the room raised their hand when I said if you were touched by a suicide or someone in your family or a close friend or something. And we just talked about some of the signs and symptoms. Is there anybody willing to share maybe a sign or a symptom that you experienced with somebody that you lost? If you could say your name, and then what was one of the signs or symptoms that you noticed before it happened?
My name is Jenny, and I have tried to kill myself many times, but the signs that I had was isolating, sleeping, and I was a cutter. And I put burns on my body. And I just want to let people know that there is help and there is hope. I come to my journey and I don't know what I would do without them. But if you feel upset, reach out to someone, call someone. Don't give up. There's always help.
Yeah, there are resources. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Anybody else, anybody that would like to share some of the signs or symptoms that you saw in somebody or maybe have experienced yourself? I think we've all at one point in our life, Michelle, have just said, oh man, I can't deal with this. I'm just going to kill myself. I think just about everybody has said that in their lifetime, but it's the acting on it. That's the part that gets serious, right?
Absolutely. It's it has to go with, depending on if there's a mental health diagnosis, if there's substance use, there's poor coping skills, if there's limited support, there are lots of things that add strength to us when we're in those times.
Right.
It's the barriers that and lack of resources and lack of help and lack of support and lack of good judgment that kind of impede that.
Exactly. Again, this is Rock 107 WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM, our Suicide Prevention Town Hall. We're taking the hour tonight commercial-free thanks to the folks at Walsh Body Shop, the shop with the car on top. They're proud to help support suicide prevention and education in our community. We are coming up on just about at 6:40. I want to move into some of the resources that we have available, like some people in the audience here have spoke about. There is help. There are resources available. I'm going to come back to you again. And what were some of the resources that you found? And I forgot your first name again.
Jenny.
Jenny, what were the resources through My Journey that, you were able to get to help you in your situation?
The peer supports help quite a bit. I'm pretty close to Meredith. That's a peer support here. And she's always willing to talk to me. You know, she... She's very patient and gentle and kind with everyone, and so is Anna. And just knowing that I can go to them, I can talk to them, and then they work me through the problem. And by the end of the day, I'm smiling. I feel like I've had someone to talk to.
Good.
Friends.
Right. Anna, so yes. That's got to make you feel good hearing that, right? I mean, that you're able to
I don't
to
know
help.
If I'm that nice, but anyway.
So tell me what resources you have available.
For myself or for...
Well, no, for through MI Journey. We opened up with an introduction at the beginning of the hour, but so somebody needs some help from MI Journey. What kind of help
One
can you offer?
One thing that I've found that helps me the most is having someone to talk about and talk through this. So we have that here. We have 3 peer support specialists that... are hired here. That means that they have experience with serious mental illness themselves. Some of them have been suicidal. Some of them have attempted. And we've been there. And it's a non-judgmental environment. We maybe are just empathetic. We've been there. We know what it's like to not want to live any longer. So that's probably the main resource we have here. Internally, externally, we would point, you know, to maybe a mental health provider, or of course, there's the crisis line if someone needs to call it. Riverwood has a crisis line. There's also a national crisis line.
And those are all services available through My Journey, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Michelle, at Riverwood, what would be some resources that we have available locally for people if they're just even thinking about it, what's the steps that they can take? Because it's not hard. It's not something that somebody needs to be afraid of doing, right?
Yeah, so we have a 24-hour emergency access line. That's 2:00 in the morning, and you just can't do it alone. You can reach out. Someone will answer that phone and kind of direct you on the services that are available. Once someone begins services, you know, we can help with outpatient therapy. We have a psychiatric department, which assists with medications. Medications are simply a tool for most mental illness. It's not a fix-all. It's an important component. Some people have just stressful environments. They need some case management to help them figure out where do I go, what do I do. Those services are available as well.
Okay, great. So, and Trent, what through the Suicide Prevention Coalition, what would be some resources that I know you've got the national crisis number, but is there anything locally that sometimes, admittedly, I think some people are like, oh, that's just an 800 number. They're somewhere off in another state or something. Is there something locally that or the national number, and they can guide you to somebody on the local level to get some help?
Well, the number is 1-800-273-TALK. That's what we call the National Crisis Line,
right?
But actually, any call that goes to that is handled at a call center in Kalamazoo.
It is.
So
okay.
It really is somewhat local in that respect. And that number is not just for the individual who feels suicidal. That might be for you if somebody calls you and is talking suicide and you really don't know what to do. You can, of course, call the Riverwood number, as was mentioned, but you can also call this number, and they can help you know what to say or how to help that person, you know, with that. So the crisis line is a resource. The coalition itself, we don't have services. We are primarily trying to connect organizations in the community and create a single place where someone can find out information. Our website is bariancares.org. And so we're trying to list resources there. So in addition to Riverwood, of course, Lakeland has, there's lots of counseling places. Some might not know that Andrews University offers free counseling, but not crisis counseling, but they do offer free counseling through their department there. And of course, the Veterans Administration for Veterans. And down across the line in Indiana is Epworth Center that has resources. So we try to list those things at our website.
Okay, so give me that phone number one more time, 800?
1-800-273-TALK.
273-TALK, that's very easy to remember. Michelle, what was? How can we get a hold of Riverwood?
Riverwood has a number, 800-336-0341.
Say it one more time.
1-800-336-0341.
Zach, can we will get this information that we're sharing tonight, the phone numbers and things, and we will have those posted. Help us out and let people know where that information, if they want to go to one of our websites. And I'll get to you in a second, Anna. Mm-hmm. So,
The website addresses when we post those things are WSJM.com and WIRX.com as well.
Okay. So they'll be posted on there. We'll have the information. Anna, you had a comment on an...
Yeah, this is something I've used. Mental Health America, which has the number that you had, that you gave, which
the
is...
1-800-273-TALK?
Yes, that's Mental Health America. They also have a crisis line that you can text.
Oh,
I've
okay.
used it.
Interesting.
And it was very helpful.
Because some people don't want to talk. It's easier to text.
Yeah, you just get your phone and you text. The number you get, you know, you bring up Messenger, and then it's 741-741.
741-741.
And you just type that in, and a real person comes on, and you have a conversation.
Through a text message, so you don't have
and
to talk to
somebody.
And it
helped me. There's also another
that's
number.
That's a great resource, Zach. I think 741-741. I think that's a really great idea, especially with the way that the younger people are using their phones more to communicate via text message or whatever. They're not actually physically talking to people.
Why are you looking at me when you say that? I'm not the youngest person here. We'll go to Brock for that.
We could go to Brock for that. So.
Do you have were you done there, Honor?
No.
Did you have one more? No, okay,
I have
one more.
So this is through, all of a sudden I can't think of what the acronym stands for, SAMHSA.
Okay.
Substance Abuse
and Mental Health Services Agency or whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, they have a number also.
And I want to get into, in a minute here or two, I want to get into what resources that we could still use in our area to help out. But before we do that, Brock, you said you've got a question from the audience,
well,
and then Zach, I want to get to you
here.
As well.
Another
resource?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
go ahead. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Laura Steinke.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, I'm actually a peer recovery coach at Sacred Heart Rehabilitation Center.
Cool.
And we are a local drug and alcohol rehabilitation center that's also a good resource to stop substance abuse. There's also a group over at the Out Center in Benton Harbor that runs a substance abuse prevention and support group for the LGBT community.
That's great information, and we'll get that information posted too. Make sure you get that to Zach before when we wrap up tonight so we can get that information posted as well. So, Zach, you said we had a couple of comments or questions that came in through our Facebook pages tonight.
One specifically on WIRX's Facebook page is from Jody, and Jody says that she lost her son almost 2 years ago to suicide, and she says, I don't think I've begun to deal with it yet, and honestly, I'm afraid to accept that it is my new reality. So are there any suggestions from the panel on how I can take that first step?
Denise, we kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier, and when I asked you how long did it take you before you could actually start to cope again with life on your own after you lost your son?
2 weeks after we lost Brandon, I went to a grief share at a church to start the recovery process because I knew after we lost my dad in 1999 that if I didn't start doing something right away to cope with and deal with the loss of my son, that it would be very difficult for me. I went to counseling and therapy both after the loss of my dad and after the loss of my son. It was invaluable for me to accept that I had a new normal. I didn't like the new normal.
Well,
I detested the new normal, and I didn't even like saying that this was now my new normal, but I had to accept that that was the case. And in order for me to move on, I had to seek some therapy and counseling from a licensed therapist, a local counselor who provided me with a lot of help to overcome, you know, the tragedy of my dad's suicide, because I didn't deal with that until 15 years after my dad died. And it was literally like, I remember being in a therapy session with my counselor and him saying, you know, you're going to have to put down that bag of bricks one day that you're carrying. And I said, which bag of bricks? And he goes, the one for your dad. You don't have to feel responsible. You don't have to feel guilty. You don't have to question why. There would never be an acceptable answer to the question why. So to even ask it seems moot.
Right.
So what I did was in that counseling session with that therapist, I put down this bag of bricks. It was an imaginary bag of bricks, but if you will, I set down this bag of bricks and I said, I'm sorry, Dad, that you felt that you needed to do what you did. Here's the bag of bricks that I've been carrying around for you for 15 years. I want to give them back. And it was right after I did that, 15 years after we lost my dad, 2 months later, my son died. If I had not gotten through the difficulties that I faced and challenges overcoming my dad's suicide, I never could have gotten over Brandon's. And I think one thing that, you know, is really hard for people to understand is when you love a child, you love your child unconditionally. Forgiveness came the instant I found my son. Brandon chose to hang himself in our garage, and I found him there. I remember the distinct moment of saying to myself that I love you. I wish you didn't do this. I forgive you because you're my child. And I had to work through that pain by going to therapy and counseling. And I had to try to help myself understand what I needed to do. And what I need to do is to make sure that people are educated about what we need to do for prevention efforts, that people are educated and know resources that they can go to help their children. And one thing I want to mention is that there's very little, unfortunately, adolescent treatment that's inpatient here in Berrien County.
And we'll get to some of the resources that we need. I want to make sure I've carved out
but
some time for that.
For the person who asked that question on Facebook, I would say if you have a family member or a friend that you can speak with about what you're feeling, or if you want to reach out to me, I'd be happy to talk to you about what I did to help me through my journey and maybe some actions that you can take to help yourself.
Trent, what were some of the things that you did to cope?
Well, I was going to mention for Jody, and one of the things that we did was Lori's Place has a specific suicide survivor support group, and I found it helpful to meet other people who understood what I was going through, and that meets on a regular basis. So I would encourage her to contact Lori's Place because that's a great resource in our community.
Okay. And how did you personally, I know it's been a while, but what did you do to cope with the loss?
Well, like Denise, I went to this grief group at Lori's Place, which was different, but and some counseling. But for me, I think each person has to find what works for them. For me, I needed to get alone. I didn't really want to be around people, trying to talk to people. So I would park someplace where I could be totally alone after he was buried. I would park at the cemetery and just have a place where I could cry and pray and process. And I would do that at first every day, and then every week, and then every month. And still, I was there last Sunday. So it's, you know, still occasional times where I just need to do that. So we have a website in his memory called nathanw.org. It has a specific page of suggestions that we put together for people that experience a suicide loss.
Good. Zach, any other questions or comments? That was the main one that came in. Any questions in the audience about anything? I know when I went through, when my brother committed suicide, much like yours, you said he had hung himself in the garage. My brother hung himself in his basement, and his wife found him. I was angry afterward. I was mad at him for a long time, and to this day I still feel a little bit of anger. I know you said I'm sorry that this happened, and there's a different range of emotions, though. Am I right, Michelle? I mean, do some people feel anger, some people, you know, feel sad? I mean, what are some emotions that some people go through?
Oh, absolutely. So there, you know, there's a standard five stages of grief, and you know, we can go through any of those in a matter of 5 minutes. It's a very personal journey. It depends on what you have, what your coping skills are, what your supports are, and just how you handle stuff.
Right.
But it ranges from anger to, you know, everything.
You'll feel hopelessness as well because, you know, it's intertwined. All of those emotions are intertwined.
Denise, did you ever feel guilty to, like, maybe what else could I have done? to prevent this? Or Trent, I was the last person to talk to my brother, and I keep rehashing that phone call in my head. It's been almost 25 years, and I keep rethinking, was there something that I said in that phone call that would have maybe triggered it? And I think I was trying to blame myself. Is that something common?
I think it's very common to question what could have been done, what more could I have seen if I intervened earlier, would this have been, you know, different? For me, I felt a lot of guilt when my dad passed away.
Right.
With Brandon, because of the amount of help we tried to get him, there was more of a feeling of just helplessness.
Right. Okay. Brock Havens, Brock, you've got a question?
If anybody thinks of something else, feel free to cut me off there, because I'm just trying to fill a little bit of time here. And first I want to say, this has been very eye-opening for me. I kind of see the world in rose-colored glasses. I have never been touched by suicide. I've never had to deal with it with family or friends. So this has been wonderful, and I appreciate all of you opening up and coming out, because I know there's a lot of pain in here. I know there's a lot of wounds that may never heal completely. So thank you for sharing your stories and helping people, because this is obviously something that needs to be addressed. So I really deep down, thank you so much for doing this. Denise, you mentioned something that really kind of stood out to me. And like I said, you know, I've never been immediately affected by this. And, you know, some, like you said, some people say, well, just think happy thoughts. Oh, it's fine. You'll be fine. For someone like me, who maybe is noticing something different or has someone come to them, what's the best way? Should you just be a sounding board for someone? How would you best handle someone coming to you not having any experience dealing with suicide at this point?
I think the best thing to do when someone comes to you and shares any type of feeling is to thank them. Thank you for sharing how you feel. Because a lot of times when someone shares something that's painful for them to share, or they're sharing something that's uncomfortable for them to share, the first thing that they don't expect to hear is thank you. Thank you for sharing. One of the reasons why we're trying so hard to reduce stigma around depression and mental health issues is because a lot of people don't know what to say. It's not normal to have, you know, me ask you, how's your day going today? And for you to reply with, I'm feeling really depressed. It's usually fine. And then we allow that fine to just be like, okay, good. Either I don't want to deal with it, or they said fine, now I can move on. You know, how about dig a little deeper?
Right.
How about ask the questions?
That's a good way to respond.
Yep.
Because I know for myself, I may not want to talk to anybody because I don't want to burden them.
Right.
You know, it's none of their, you know, they don't care. But if they, you know, thank you for telling me, you know, I really appreciate you trusting me to open up.
And
so
if
that's
you're
really
not
important.
Aware of what mental health help resources there are, share with that person, hey, I don't really know what you're going through. I'm not best equipped to help you, but let's figure out who is. And let me be there with you while you go through that journey, because I'm here for you. I'm here to help you. Tell me what you need from me.
And we've got just under 2 minutes left here. What I think we'll do is we'll wrap up the on-air broadcast here as we get close to the 7 o'clock here, and be respectful of the programming. We're on Facebook Live. I think we'll continue this conversation, if you can stay for a few more minutes afterward, and we'll keep going on Facebook Live. So if you're listening on air, we're going to wrap up here in about a minute or so. But if you can log in to Facebook Live on WIRX.com or Newstalk 94.9 WSJM, either one of the Facebook pages, you can follow along with us here. I want to, as we kind of wrap up, and what we'll talk about after we finish up on air here, is I want to talk about what resources we have available. So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But I want to kind of recap a little bit about what we talked tonight. This is our suicide prevention town hall meeting right here on Rock 107 WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM. I'm Ray Gustafson from WSJM. Brock Havens is here from WIRX, as well as Zach East. And we have Anna from MI Journey, or My Journey, as we call it, Michelle from Riverwood, Denise, a
concerned
parent, and Trent Watford from the Suicide Prevention Coalition. First off, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and taking the time out of your busy day to discuss this, what I would consider a very important issue. Michelle, give me the information again of how they can get a hold of Riverwood if they need some help. the phone number?
The phone number is 800-336-0341.
One more time?
1-800-336-0341.
And Trent, the national number for the National Crisis and Suicide Hotline?
1-800-273-TALK.
Thank you for joining us. This is Ray Gustafson for Rock 107 WIRX and News Talk 94.9 WSJM.